Being disabled or having a chronic illness can feel like you're moving forward in reverse. I'm your host, Scott Martin. Join me and my new friends from this underrepresented community as we talk about disrupting the status quo and creating change within the world and within ourselves. Hey, life's a road trip. Hop in. Let's turn on some tunes and go. With me in the passenger seat and managing the radio is Jackie Schold. I'm taking my intro from the About Me page on your website, which I think says it best. And it reads, "Hello, I'm Jackie. I am overflowing with joy and awe that I am an art therapist and counselor. I love what I do. It blends my insatiable interest in psychology, my love for art, and my desire to help people live more intentional, meaningful lives. I appreciate that every day I get to have deep conversations with others about topics that significantly impact their well-being. I love working together to explore the answers to the complex questions like, why do I feel so much? If I know better, why can't I manage to do better? How do I stop worrying so much? And my life seems good, why can't I manage to be happy? I've intentionally worked to face and explore my own questions. I know change is possible because I've walked the journey and I see it around me daily. I feel honored to bring the hope to others that at times felt so very out of reach for me." Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
You told me that you're on the East Coast and for this week or so. What are you doing out there?
I am in the process of moving, so I'm here to just get some things situated.
Okay. And how's that going for you?
It's fun.
how unboxed are you?
Oh, not at all. I haven't even packed.
Okay. That's the norm.
This is folks, preliminary
Jackie's
visit.
Normal. Yeah. Okay. And it's going to take you months. I mean, that's
oh,
what
yes.
happens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, welcome to the East Coast out there. I must tell you that I love your art. That's one of the first things I started digging into on you to see what sort of products you were able to put out. And actually, folks, on the Life's a Road Trip website is the image that I like, my favorite of Jackie's pieces. So take a look at that. Now, you were moving from Tucson, and I wanted to ask you, do you get a lot of your inspiration for a lot of your art, especially the colors from your surroundings when you were in Tucson?
No, because I'm an abstract artist primarily, and it's coming from my feelings most of the time.
Well, your feelings have great colors. Because that's what attracted me. It's very interesting. And we're going to get into a book that you've illustrated and written a little bit later in the show. And I think folks should go on there and give you a taste of what you do, because I really like it personally. Now, I want to first open with getting into an article that you wrote. It's titled, "I Experienced That Too. Does That Mean I'm Autistic?" That appeared on Medium.com, and a link for that, folks, is on the Life's a Road Trip website, so you can get in there, read it. And it opens with, "Whenever I explain a specific characteristic about autism, someone inevitably mentions, but I have that experience too. Does that mean I'm autistic? Here's what I tell them." Go on. What do you say?
Okay. First of all, I want to say I'm impressed that you were so up on my reading. That was released, I think, last week.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I was
like, wow, that's impressive. Yes, I wrote that because really almost every essay I write, I have someone commenting, but I have that too. Does that mean I'm autistic? And so I wanted to clarify about that, because autism is a range of characteristics. And so it's likely that almost every human will inevitably have one of those characteristics.
Okay.
What is different is that they will not have all of them that autistics have, as well as the intensity of the characteristic or the frequency with which it occurs.
So this is, autism has a spectrum, I believe.
Yes.
But there are various ranges within that spectrum.
Yes.
How do you know that you're autistic? How are you labeled that?
Well, that's two questions. actually. Because there's one question you're asking is essentially like, how do I get diagnosed? And then there's another question of like, how do you know you're autistic? Which is a very fitting question right now, because many people are choosing to not pursue diagnosis. And that's because the current diagnosis model for autism is primarily based on the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, which for anyone who doesn't know, that's basically just what lays out all the different mental health disorders. And for autism, it's based on the external behaviors. Okay. And they came up with those by primarily observing young white cis boys. And so what they're finding is this doesn't actually reflect the experience of other genders, of other races, of other classes of people, as well as it doesn't reflect the interior experience of autism.
Okay.
So fast forward to you're like, okay, what is autism? So I conceptualize autism very differently than the DSM-5. What I am looking at is how a person perceives the world, like how their sensory system is taking in information, as well as how their brain feels and thinks. Because an autistic person has far more neural connections that are constantly firing.
Got it.
And it causes other parallel pathways to fire at the same time, meaning your brain is just like ding, 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 ding,
okay,
all the time.
Okay.
Which then causes characteristics in like six primary categories. So when I'm working with someone, we're looking at those six categories.
All right. Now you mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, earlier that people tend not to want to be identified. They avoid.
Some people are choosing to self-identify, like to say, I am autistic, instead of pursuing a formal diagnosis, because many times it's difficult to find a practitioner who has gone on with continuing education to really understand autism from a neurodiverse lens, which neurodiverse just means this perspective that it presents differently for different genders and different people, and that it's not a disorder. Like we're here saying we as autistics, and for anyone who doesn't know, I am autistic. We are saying this is not a disorder. This is a different neurotype, and it's okay to be that. It's not something we need to fix.
Got it. Now, a few weeks ago, I did a show with Becca Lori Hector, and she is autistic as well. And we discussed autism, and she was mentioning insurance issues and how it tends to be set up. People of later stages, and could be a good segue into what we're now going to get into, how insurance, you need to be able to be identified as being autistic early on in order to gain the benefits of insurance, because otherwise what Becca was saying is they tend to avoid wanting to pay for bills because they would go back and say, well, you weren't identified early on. So that seems to be a struggle that autistics are having as well. So let's get into the segue then, because you also wrote another article. When I learned I was autistic, it all made sense. And a link to this is going to be on the Life's a Road Trip website. Mm-hmm. In it, you interview Priscilla Stuckey and about late identified autism. In an earlier episode of, I already went over Becca, but I want to get into what you asked her, the question, how do you feel when you learned you were autistic? And she responded, relieved, exclamation. It was totally unexpected, a lot of relief. I have a lifelong habit of observing and seeking to understand my own internal rhythms. And over the years, I'd made a lot of sense about them. But there were a few things I kept tripping over, like being a headbanger as a child. What was with that? She wrote, I get so overwhelmed from time to time. And she says, what's that all about? Or I find other people reacting to me in ways that seem kind of, well, odd. When I learned I was autistic, it all made sense. Every last piece, I felt so relieved. And after the relief, I felt gratitude. So would you please get into the late stage, you know, someone finding out when she was 64, what that's like.
Yes. And this is becoming more and more common. people of that age who find out they're autistic, they're referred to as the lost generation, because we simply didn't know enough about autism for them to be identified when they were younger. And so typically their whole life, they go feeling like there's something different about me, but I don't know what it is. And like just sensing that they're off, that they're weird. And so it becomes a huge relief to know, oh, it's just that my brain functions differently than most people. I'm not broken. I just have a different operating system.
And you seem to now, second time to me as a person that's not labeled as autistic, and I'm not going to say, oh, why that happens to me? Maybe I am. No, I'm not going to do that. But it seems that you're really into simplifying it and trying to get away from the taboos of autism. So therefore you must be a certain way. But again, what I'm getting from you and learning some of this now, is that it is how you described it before. It's just how the brain functions differently. That's all it is. And people need to understand that and stop the stupid labels.
Stupid labels as in
people from my perspective, and I substitute teach and I used to teach, and I was around students all the time, that if someone, well, students like the label, and I know that society likes the label as well. And it seemed that the labels tend to be someone is autistic, so therefore they're definitely off. And it's not an understanding of, it's just the mind working, as you phrased it earlier, just kind of going haywire. There's not that understanding.
Yes. I see what you're saying now. I just wanted to be clear, because some people also ask me like, well, why do you even need the label autistic? If you're just self-identifying, and I feel, you know, in that this case, it unlocks a lot of information for you and understanding about yourself. But I know that wasn't your point.
No, I do get it though. No, I think that does branch off or is a bridge to what I was talking about, because it still comes down to education, and there's lacking education and people having an understanding on how things are, and hopefully things are getting better, because that's where I'm trying to take the show now. So anyway, let's venture off, and I'm going to open up your book, and it's called Grief is a Mess. And this is related, well, I'll just read it. And the opening, it says, "For my mom, I still cannot believe that I have to live the rest of my life without you. Thank you for loving me unconditionally, showing me how to laugh amidst pain, and encouraging me to use my skills to help others. I love you more." Could you get into, I mean, obviously that's the inspiration. Your mother passed away. Mm-hmm. How can I phrase it? I guess I'll just simplify from the backside of it. I read through what's available on Amazon, and I think it's extremely helpful, or would be extremely helpful for people. It's not just autism. It's how you presented things, and you, again, simplified. And that's what I'm finding you doing so far on the show. And I appreciate it, Jackie. So could you talk about that book, please? Grief is a Mess.
Yes. I wrote that the year after my mom died. That was 9 years ago, which is crazy.
It's getting out there.
I was just so lost in sadness, as well as everybody in my family responded to my mother's death differently. And there was a lot of pressure around like, well, why aren't you doing this? Or why aren't you doing that? And kind of everybody judging the other for how they were responding. And so I made cartoons about it. And so anyone who doesn't know my book, it's a book of illustrations about the range of grief, from the different emotions we experience to the different physical characteristics, all those things. And I just wanted to validate that range and to say, like, look, none of us have the answers of how to get through grief. We're just like breathing, trying to keep going. And so maybe let's be a little nicer to ourselves and others in that.
And accept it. Again, simplification. I'm going to one page. It says someone tried to tidy it up with five stages, and it looks like a cat. One, denial, anger, depression, bargaining, and acceptance. Mm-hmm. That I think says a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the earlier pages. on setting people up for, oh, this is what's in the book. And this helps them probably find comfort. And I would assume that that was one of the rationale for what you were trying to do with it. But I think you do an outstanding job with it, Jackie.
Thank you.
I think it shows off a lot of your talent again. So,
thank you.
It's that time in the show and we are starting to get noticed by folks. And I've actually found a couple of ads. So we need to take a 2 second ad pause so someone can drop in an ad here. So here we go. Okay. We're back. Hopefully it was a decent ad and nothing so stupid. Yeah, I actually was able to pick over what types of ads can be dropped. And of course I stayed away from politics and anything like that. Cause I don't want some politician getting on anyway.
Wait, can I ask a question about your ads? Do you have people like individuals do ads too? Like if they do like services for autistics or something?
No, because what it is, and I notice it today, because my wife and I listen to Sirius XM quite a bit and they just drop in ads, or I should say Pandora just drops in ads.
Okay.
If I'm listening to my Tom Petty radio station, they'll just drop in a couple of ads. It's all automated. It's based on who's listening, where they're listening from, and whether, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. No one has to do anything.
That's very sophisticated.
I'm learning a lot. It's really cool. And a couple of people, a couple of ads that have been dropped, I've been okay. And please, I'm not, because I can also cut them out. If I hear an ad that I can pull it off.
So, that's nice.
Yeah. I have some control. So
yeah,
folks, hopefully it's a McDonald's ad and you're hungry. All right. So, let's shift gears and get into your podcast. It's called, Autistic Unscripted. And I want to talk about, making friends as an autistic. Now, I'll read a little, opening from it. It's an expansive new talk show for two. And I love this. It's got a hashtag, actually autistic folks. Join us as we explore the weird and wonderful autistic identity. Your co-host is Jennifer Allenbaugh. And I want to read a piece here about, now Jennifer coaches other late identified autistic and ADHD entrepreneurs, to embody expansiveness so they can thrive in business and in life. And her website, here's talk about ads, expansivemindsetcoaching.com. Here it is again, folks, expansivemindsetcoaching.com. Tell Jen that I'm going to send her a bill for that plug. Okay. So talk to us. Why don't you just open it up and say, I listened to one show and I thought it was really fun, making friends as an autistic. And you guys were bantering back and forth about what it's like. So go on.
Yes. I call Jen my business bestie. We are both autistics and we talk all the time about what it means for us to be autistic. We both found out later in life. So me in my 30s, her in her 40s, about being autistic. And so we talk about, gosh, what it's like to find out that late in life. And then we at one point we're like, we should just make a show of like these topics. And so we did a full season. I think it was 10, 20 minute episodes on YouTube of us talking about the key topics. Which was a lot of fun, but I gotta say, like, I realized like video is not my medium. I am primarily a writer, an artist.
We're getting you out of your shell, lady.
Yes.
You're doing fine. I think you guys are open. Again, I think it's meant for, or what it does is allow people to experience other autistic folk to just talk and to get it out and to hear and learn from more that, hey, someone else is talking about it, so therefore it's okay for me to be autistic or finding out that I'm autistic. I think so. A lot of times when I'm doing these shows, sometimes it's when I'm studying the person or sometimes it's during the show, and yours is when during the show here, I'm really finding a thread that runs through you. And I think a lot of it has to do through your art and things. And what you did in Grief is a Mess is there's a thread, I think, that you want to help people and you're honest and open and you're just presenting things. You're giving people an open window into autism just as part of life for them.
Yeah.
I applaud what you're doing, dude.
Thank you.
But you just said something you didn't and I didn't learn this about you. You didn't find out until you were in your 30s. So you've got some degrees, and so you didn't go to college to do this. What'd you go to college for? What was your...
My undergraduate was in English, in writing. I mean, I'm a writer, so that tracks, but...
Okay, got it.
That was my undergrad, yeah. And so then I did my math. Then I went back to school when I decided I wanted...
That's where these come in, your credentials. Mm-hmm. All right. ATR-BC.
So fancy.
Yes, it is. I had to look it up, but translate, please.
It's a board certified art therapist. Is one of my...
BC board certified.
Yeah.
ATR art therapist. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it. And then what's the LPC?
I'm a licensed professional counselor, just means I'm a mental health counselor.
Okay. And when did you work on that?
So I went back to school in 2016 to master's.
Was that after you were diagnosed?
That was before I found out about autism.
So, but you went into art therapy not knowing, and then you came out of it. Isn't life freaking weird? You came out of it and it's perfect. It seems to fit. Odd.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I used to set huge goals for myself, and the older I get, the more I'm like, wow, the universe gives me things far cooler than my goals.
I think it did give you something here because it tugged you into doing this, because from everything I've read, this is a fit for you. And I think you're a fit for it. Which leads us into your website. I'm going to open up your website and I want to read the opening. That's a great smile, by the way. It says, "Hello, I'm Jackie. I am an autistic art therapist. I work with newly identified autistics and those who suspect that they might be autistic. I help autistics who felt broken their entire lives, who experienced a lifetime of feeling too much and yet not enough. Who couldn't learn to trust themselves because they believed something was wrong with them." That's deep, but it's also light at the same time. So here we go again with newly identified. How do people find you, and how do you hook up with them to go down a road together to find out if they truly are, and how the heck do you use art to do that? Boy, that's broad, but go for it.
Nowadays, most of my clients find me through my writing. I'm a writer on Medium. I write at least one essay a day about autism because I love writing.
Wow.
And really, like you said, I'm just writing about things as I learn them and as I have conversations with my autistic clients. And it's kind of like learning in progress. And so most people find me as a therapist through that writing. And most people who come to me suspect that they might be autistic, or either like, hey, I'm autistic and could use some help in learning how to work with my brain.
So you've got two routes. You might have in someone that's the article you wrote recently about people thinking that they are. Mm-hmm. Do you come across people that, no, damn it, I am autistic because I had this. I know I am. Or is it more, could you help me to see if I truly am?
I think it's 50-50. Some are like, I'm not sure. Could you help me? And others are like, no, I know I'm autistic. Can we talk about like what this means for my life?
Do they bring you their doctor's note saying that they're autistic, or do you just go with what they think?
Some are diagnosed and some are not, and I just go with what they think. And I've yet to encounter someone that I'm like, yo, let's talk. You are not autistic.
Okay. So you're upfront about that.
Yeah. I would be if I thought they weren't. I would. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Below that part on your front pages, I provide art therapy so autistics can understand their autistic identity, identify their unique autistic characteristics, learn to work with their wonderfully autistic minds. Very cool. I definitely want you to get into that. Liberate themselves from self-judgment and shame. That's a biggie too. Yeah. Trust themselves. Ooh, yeah. Feel excited to wake up each morning and experience joyful, meaningful lives. That's quite the list. So yeah. I want you to really get into, learn to work with their wonderfully autistic minds.
Yes. I'm glad you asked this, because most traditional therapy techniques need to be tailored to autism, meaning as they are, aren't effective. So for instance, one thing about autistics is we have what I call constellation thinking. We have one thought that then triggers like 100 thoughts. And so our minds are just so full. And so if some therapist is like, I just need you to practice emptying your mind, letting your thoughts go, like, which is a very traditional therapy technique, that is not going to work for us. And we're going to feel like even crazier. And so
no one's going to be lying on a sofa. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, are other ways to do that, though. Okay. For instance, I do an art therapy technique where like you're making certain lines on a paper in a complex way that it is so complex your brain cannot think.
Okay.
So that we have different ways to give our brain a break, but we have to kind of be doing other things in order for that to happen.
Okay. So again, it seems pretty simple. all right. Back to your website. You've got a services tab. And you've got 5: autism, business owners, grief, overwhelming emotions and thoughts, religious deconstruction. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on that one. I want to stay out of politics, but religious deconstruction, what is that?
Well, so I did my thesis in my master's program on people going through religious deconstruction. I designed a whole art therapy curriculum based on that. Yeah, for people.
Art and religion.
Well, basically for people who grew up in religion and found the beliefs to be harmful to them, and I'm not saying this is religious teachings that are harmful. It's often like the way our culture interprets religion, like you must be good, you cannot sin, things like that aren't helpful to a soul.
Okay.
And so I help a person, well, not I, but the art therapy and us working together helps them to kind of heal through that, as well as when you're deciding you no longer want to be with a religion, you're kind of left with like, oh my God, what are my values? What are my beliefs? What are the behaviors I should have? It's really forming a whole new identity. Okay. And so we look at how to do that, which is ironic in that it's kind of the same work I do in autism now.
Interesting. So again, are you saying that you didn't intend for this to be part of the package? But you're able to sit back and look at, you know what? There's a relationship. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to start. Yeah. You mentioned something about life. I mean, it's just out there about how you can stumble into things.
Yes. And you reading over my website, I was like, wow, I need to update this, because now I solely work with autistic clients. Like I have clients that have experienced things like grief and religious deconstruction, but now I don't have people coming to me for those other topics. They come to me for autism.
Okay. Now, on one of the pages, I love this, Jackie, this is cool. You have, what if someone sucks at art? You're honest again.
Yeah.
Get into that.
Yes, because a lot of people are like, oh, I could never do art therapy. I can't even draw stick figures. And I say, oh my gosh, you are the perfect person for me then, because art therapy is not about the end product. It's about the process of making. Okay. And most of the things we make, quite frankly, are ugly. So like, I mean, we're doing like scribbles, we're splashing paint, we're making, you know, just all sorts of weird things. And it's not about the end product.
So is this a process-oriented piece, as in, is it about the process? You find something that, and it sounds like art would be something natural, that triggers someone to be able to finally release from their own thoughts or their own perceptions, and then it just comes out, and you're able to, then you guys sit and talk about it. Is that, I mean, what do you use, what, yeah, do, you, what I mean, do you do that, with the art that, then? You guys talk about it, or just it's a vent and that's all it is?
Yes, we definitely tend to talk about it, but it also depends on what art was being done and in what context. Like, it's such a wide range, and I really try to tailor what we do to the person and what I think will help them the most. Because sometimes right. I'm like, oh, this person needs a little more insight on this issue, and the art can help that. Other times, they don't need insight. Sometimes they just need to get these angry thoughts and emotions out and release them. And that's, you know, a different thing. We're
release doing. The hounds.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I want to wrap up us talking again on this. And you are an interesting person. Tell us about what the fun letter is.
Oh, my fun letter.
Yes, I noticed that.
Okay. Yeah. So everyone's always like, you should have an email newsletter. And I always felt like that was a lot of pressure and a bit like, I don't want to just talk about myself. And then, I don't know, one day it just dawned on me, like, I could have a fun letter, like, say all the things that are fun. So it's, I'm basically just saying, like, here's the weird things I'm doing in my life right now, kind of reclaiming what fun is, because for autistics, we've often been told, like, for instance, I love writing, and that's so fun to me. And someone else might be like, oh, Jackie, you're such a nerd, or you should get out more. But it's like, no, this is what brings me joy, and cool. I'm doing it. And so that's what I'm doing in my fun letter, as well as it's where I update people if like I have an opening for a new client or if I have a new offering, something like that, I put it in the newsletter.
So people can go on your website. And again, the website is going to be, a link is going to be on the Life's a Road Trip website. So people can go on there and sign up for the fun letter, correct?
Yes. And it's actually my only way now that new clients can find out if I have openings, because my wait list is at least 2 months at this point.
Whoa.
So when I have a new opening, I just put it in my newsletter.
So when we first got on, and this is before we hit record, you were telling me about a lot of this is now online. So people in, I don't know, Seattle, Washington can reach out to you and do some of this and do it online, correct? It's not just people sitting in front of you.
Yeah, actually, I've had someone from Seattle. So I also, one of my other licenses is I have an International Expressive Art Therapy registration. Like, yes, I know you need another
You're
one.
Deep.
But this allows me to work with people across the world. So like I have some clients in Australia. I have had them in other places. And so, yes, we meet for 45 minutes online in our sessions.
Because we have listeners from all over the place. I mean, it just weirds me out.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, after we hit 20,000, over the weekend, I really went in and started digging in about where are we getting the listeners from? It just blows me away that people are all over the place are starting to pick this up, because we're touching on something that nobody else is doing. So talking, going back to what you said with the fun letter, this gives me joy. I want to slide into and wrap up the show with the road trip roundup. Now, Jackie, there's five questions I'm going to throw at you. You just kick back and just, maybe it's going to make you just think or not think. So question number one, when road tripping, do you tend to do fast food or local diners? It's road tripping. You're just popping in for an hour.
I'm so sorry, but I'm going to go in the middle. I do grocery stores.
You are weird.
Yeah. What? Well, but also I, as an autistic, I have a very limited diet of things I prefer. And so grocery stores, it's easier to like, be like, I'm going to get some grapes. So I'm going to get this.
Oh, so you just do pickups like, you know what? You've got, you might have something there, Jeff. It's just, okay. I got it. You're not weird anymore. Maybe you're starting a trend. That makes sense, really.
I mean, I do eat out, but I have a very sensitive digestive system. Okay. So I try to just eat simple things as I travel. Okay.
What's your dream car for a road trip? It could be something you grew up with, something you have, or something maybe you'd want to rent in order to go on a road trip. It's like, I'm going to be doing a coast trip. Yeah.
This is so funny. This is on my mind because I'm going to be driving across the East Coast as I move with my dog. What do I want? I think it would be fun to take an RV. I don't want to drive it though. I don't want to drive it. I want to be a passenger.
Let the dog drive it. Okay, cool. You're the second guest has said that. So yeah, it does give. Oh. See, I take some ideas from this, and I talked to my wife Sue about, it's getting us. We're actually leaving on Sunday. We're heading out with her sister and brother-in-law. We're doing music in Tennessee. We're going to Nashville and then Memphis. And I'll bring up some ideas. I definitely think that we're not going to be doing fast food. We're going to be doing like more like local diet. Maybe we'll stop at a grocery store. Here we go. Now I'm getting tricky. You're on the younger side, but I think this still applies. What's the last cassette or CD that played while you were on a road trip? Mm-hmm. Don't say Sirius XM. There had to be something that you've popped in.
I'm sure it was a mixtape CD.
There you
back
go.
When I would burn, like my friends would burn me music.
Okay.
And so that's, yeah, I know that's not like a,
No.
Specific it, group or something.
No, it's
but
not.
Usually that's
it's
what
it you
was.
Did.
We,
yeah.
we used to burn CDs a lot. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
So.
Yeah. No, we used to do that back in my day. They were on cassettes. But all right. Yeah. Next, number four, Coke or Pepsi?
I don't drink soda. The carbonation hurts my stomach.
Oh, okay. So when you're in the grocery store, what are you picking up to drink?
Oh my gosh. I love orange juice right now.
Oh.
So it's kind of like what my mood is, but I love juice and water.
Okay, cool. Last one. Mm-hmm. This is always, I love this question. What's your favorite road trip memory?
First, I laugh because I went across the country with my grandparents and my cousin, and we got in such a huge fight, my cousin and I, that we were young, to be fair, like
okay.
7, 8, and I chucked right. my hairbrush at her.
Oh.
And yeah, and we laugh about that all the time now. Like it was both a fun and an awful road trip, but it is like the best, it has the best stories for just like how awful we were to each other. So yeah.
Those are some of the best. Yeah. The family.
We get along too. Now for the record.
Okay. I wonder if one of you would show the other one a hairbrush and then just look at it.
I know
other.
We do actually. We do. I'm like, hey, Mari.
Oh, God. Okay. Hey, we're done with the show. This has been great. I want you to stick on after we say bye bye to everybody, but I'll just say ciao and chillax, everybody, and keep listening. Thanks for listening. Check out previous episodes with new ones dropping each Tuesday. If you don't see a synopsis of this show where you're listening, visit our website at lifesaroadtrip.podbean.com for more information on this week's guest. This is your host, Scott Martin, reminding you that life's a road trip.